7C, Eric.
Right. 7C is a report on the draft camping ordinance.
Spencer, please take it away.
Okay. As the council is aware, the city of Newport's current camping ordinances are unenforceable due to federal court decisions and enactment of state laws regarding camping in public spaces. So we're extremely limited of what we can do from a regulatory standpoint regarding camping at this point. We did present a plan to the council that had a map that identified those areas where camping would be permitted and camping where camping would not be permitted. Basically, based on the council's discussion, we have revised that with the current ordinance, and I'd like Chief Malloy to basically talk about what would be regulated in this draft ordinance. And so I'll turn it over to you, Jason.
Thank you. Good evening, council. As we've...
I don't know if your mic's on.
Little light's on.
Yeah.
It's on. Okay.
Okay. We've talked about a lot over the last 2.5 years on this camping ordinance. And in comments from our council, from our the ones... previous ordinances that have been presented, meeting with staff, and then also meeting with a variety of our community and our stakeholders, what we've identified is there's not a way to come up with a perfect ordinance that is going to meet the needs of every person. But what is very important to us is that we do follow the House bills that Oregon adopted. We follow federal rules, federal guidelines, federal court lines, and established guidelines, and still while looking out for the rights of our homeless community, also looking out for the rights of our property owners, our visitors. And so one of the things that was done with the draft ordinance is in front of you is we did remove the timelines on when somebody can and cannot be somewhere. So there's no more 8 p.m. or 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. Type language. The other thing that we did is we, instead of trying to identify areas by zone, which everybody remembers Derek's infamous maps, took those out and went through and looked, you know, where are our biggest congested areas and problems. And what we identified was the heavily trafficked areas, either through industrial, tourist, commercial, things like that. And so if you look through it, you'll see a list of areas such as on the Bayfront, Elizabeth Street, Coast Street, Ocean View, some of the smaller streets that are heavily used, such as Rocky Way, Agate Way, and then also the 50 feet on either direction of Highway 101, 50 feet on either direction of Highway 20, and then also identified prohibited camping in front of a dwelling, which then covers any residence. And so this still leaves a variety of spaces, and no, I don't have a map of what is available, but when you think of the areas that are not covered in this, this is a lot. There's still a lot of commercial property. There's still a lot of business property. There's still a lot of areas in Newport that do not have a building, a business, things like that. One of the big conversations was Forest Park, which is heavily populated now, and which is, this is the Ocean to Bay Trail. Ultimately, that area from the pool over to the beach, and it's a difficult area for us to close. There was a lot of conversation on this. It is a very large, big wooded area. And so what we did was we ultimately simplified this, that there would be no camping within a certain amount of feet of a trail, on any of the trails. We still did leave in the city parking lots unless they're specifically designated, like 9th and Herbert, and then also did remove from camping city parks, because those are used for a variety of reasons, children, families, city events, things like that. And so with these places, if we allow camping in certain areas that we've identified as prohibited, when there is an event, then we have to go in, move people out, then there's timelines that come in, and there's a system in place to be able to move people. So this was, again, this is a work in progress. It has not had our final review yet, so it's not ready for a public hearing tonight and adoption or anything like that. But what we do want is, I guess, are we getting closer, you know, to the to the concerns that the council has voiced over the few times that this has been presented. I do know that legal aid Blair Beaubier is here, and he's been very instrumental in this, and him and I have had conversations, and I don't know if he's coming here just to listen or hopefully provide some kind of input tonight. But he's a great resource for it also, just to make sure, you know, one of the great things about Blair is it's not just, no, let's not do this, it's let's do this right, and which is what we're trying to do.
Well, Chief, thank you for this revised draft. Once we, you know, once that draft is finalized, I guess we'll have a public hearing about it. Is that?
Yeah, that will be the plan. But we, before we bring anything to public hearing, we want to make sure that we're on track with the council, because we don't want to have a public hearing on something that the council is not comfortable with proceeding with. And
I guess a question I had was, you know, Jason, you know the ops of the department and where vehicle abandonment or occupied vehicles that are inoperable occur, and I assume that officer lived experience is incorporated into this new draft, correct?
So it is. It's not only that, but also kind of our complaint areas. You know, how many there are certain areas when there's abandoned vehicles or RVs, a lot of people camping in particular areas, our complaints are significant. We don't have complaints in 100% of the city. And there are certain areas that we do get complaints, but somebody is in compliance. Whether we have an ordinance or not, we still go by state law or we go by federal guidelines. And we have a lot of people that are in compliance. And so then we just make sure that they're, you know, doing the rest of our codes. They're cleaning up after themselves, not dumping sewage somewhere, you know, things like that, not having any kind of public health hazard. And so, again, I still don't think we can identify a perfect ordinance and a perfect solution, but I do think that this has addressed a lot of the concerns that have been brought up. This is something that, you know, we still have to have the staff and the resources to be able to deal with this. I think that's going to be an ever-changing or evolving situation for us, is how do we enforce this? I think there's going to be a lot of alternatives and education involved instead of enforcement.
And then one issue from the Herbert Street lot I've heard a lot about from citizens and business owners is belongings that have been placed outside of an RV that are associated with a particular RV that tends to have some mission creep, so to speak. And when an RV is parked on a city street and they unload it and put belongings onto the city right-of-way, where in this ordinance would that have teeth to do a educational contact to the occupants of that vehicle about the behavior to structure up the belongings? Because I've heard that from a number of people.
So anytime that somebody's in a prohibited area, that's obviously a lot easier for us. If they are in a lawful area and a allowable area to camp, overnight park, whatever, there's still other rules you have to follow. At no point can anybody hinder a right-of-way. Can't become a traffic hazard for vehicles, cannot be a hazard for vehicles or for people and persons. So those right-of-ways still have to be maintained. Anytime somebody is violating those, that's going to be a reason for police contact. And most of those times, it's just simple as us contacting somebody, educating somebody, saying, you know, don't force us to do this. We don't want to have to do this. Here's what the rule is. The generally, most of the times people are compliant. We've had this at 9th and Herbert, where we technically don't really have a rule right now, and so there's a lot of winging it on how we're getting compliance and enforcing it. And again, we can't be down there 24 hours a day. We can't be down there every day. And so when our staff does go down there, we make contact with people. They've been very compliant. You know, they've put their stuff back in their RV. They've made the concessions needed, or have just done what's needed to follow the rules. We've been trying to tell people that, you know, there's an updated rule coming regarding 9th and Herbert, and it's going to be a lot more strict and a lot easier to be kicked out. Something,
Spencer?
Yeah, I'd like Eric to talk a little bit about, because it came up and it has been a specific issue, a little bit about the arrangement that we're looking at for 9th and Herbert. And so, Eric, do you want to talk a little bit about what the plan is for that?
Sure. Thank you, Spencer. So as Spencer mentioned, one of the things that we were working on as staff was some additional, I guess, regulations and guidelines for the 9th and Herbert lot or the car camping area in Newport. We decided to put together, I guess, like a guest rules agreement that would be signed by any individuals or guests that use the property. It clarifies a lot of things, obviously, all the sanitation, compliance with city nuisance. The other portion of that is that we were looking at an administrative arrangement. The entity that we were working with thus far that has expressed interest is Grace Winds. They were very interested in administering the property for us and basically ensuring compliance with the guest rules agreement. So far, we think that's really going to address a lot of the concerns while also kind of being a low barrier place for folks to go, which I think is the original intent of the whole program there.
I think one of the problems that we had with Herbert, it was an unregulated area without anyone trying to manage it. This will be our effort at this. If this fails, then we'll go to plan C.
And a lot of these, they're very difficult for us as the police department to enforce, regulate, or even to gain compliance when we don't have a rule to go back on. When we don't have, right now we're in limbo with so many things with our camping ordinance not being enforceable, so we put out the directive, we're not going to enforce it. With 9th and Herbert, while maybe our temporary permit that we had isn't valid and expired or active, we still don't have the rules to go back to. We can go back to our, you know, we have an ordinance that says no overnight camping in a parking lot. We're still unclear if we can enforce that just because of other federal rules in the House bills. And so having something established then gives us that authority to be able to go out and contact people and either gain compliance, move them on, take enforcement, whatever is warranted. And this draft of the ordinance, our city attorney still hasn't finalized. I do know that we still, once we got to a point where our council was comfortable that we would send it to off to, I believe the League of Oregon Cities for review or somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh, CIS.
Yeah, so anyway, if the council is comfortable with the general content, then that would be the next step that we would do is the city attorney would review. He wants CIS to review this as well. And then at that point, we'd be in a position to bring it back for potential adoption by the council. But we don't want to go through this process if we're missing the mark from what the council wants us to accomplish.
Councilor Bateo?
I just have a question on all the city Newport Park areas, you know, on the ordinance. You select the streets that are busier. So how do you select those? I mean, I think we need to have very specific information when someone asks you and say, you know, why I cannot be in this area. How do you select this street? Because I noticed one of the areas is 101. And I know that sometimes, you know, there's like you know, where is Walmart? I don't know if that is also part of this. Where is Walmart? You know, there's like the site next to the, you know, the trail. But I just trying to think how we gonna go with that message.
Well, there was a lot of staff discussions of this. We've had, Derek and I have spent a lot of quality time together talking about this over the last 2 years, along with other staff members. And it comes to a lot of it down to safety. And so it's not arbitrarily picking a number saying, you know, X amount of feet from this particular road. Highway 101, Highway 20, I think everybody can agree are extremely well traveled. And while there are certain sections that, you know, that area that you're referring to north of Walmart between there and 36th Street, there's not, you know, there is a lot of wooded area that if somebody is off the beaten path, I guess, that they're not in danger. So there can be little modifications to this, you know, to take particular sections out. But again, this is also ODOT right away. We don't have the authority to give permission or prohibit something from an ODOT right away. And so, but we are able to limit those side streets and arterial streets that are bordering 101 and 20, or the collector streets, I believe they're called. And so there was just a lot of thought of this, this was complaint driven. And I can tell you in the last 2 years, I don't think I've gone a week without a phone call or an in-person contact with somebody with either a complaint or can you prohibit it in this neighborhood? I think it's okay in this neighborhood. Most of it is, I'd like it prohibited in my neighborhood. And here's why. The area off of Highway 20, First Street, you know, is very active between Highway 20 and the Avery Building. There is a lot of foot traffic, a lot of homeless that use those services, mm-hmm. and a lot of people that are using that to sleep. 50 feet doesn't cover very far. But again, that's a very, very highly traveled area and very unsafe, you know, for somebody to be in the right of way, even if they're not blocking the street, blocking the sidewalk. There's just a lot that can happen. So I think there's a couple more suggestions that I have with that, like you had said, but I think we at some point need to get to a get to a moving forward point. We've discussed at a staff level of the places that would be prohibited that are handled actually by resolution, because those are easier for the city to adopt in, or the council to adopt in a change of resolution than change an entire ordinance. And so there would be a reference to prohibited places by council resolution. If I answered your question, you know, there's been a lot of discussion. It hasn't been arbitrary. It's been for a variety of reasons, and it generally comes down to safety.
And I just kind of wonder, I was kind of wondering that area. I know that I walk very often in that area, and there's always people, you know, on that side. So, but like you said, if that is so that, do we have to have an agreement with ODOT about this? I mean, do they know if there are like a Highway 101 and Highway 20, and we are, you know, deciding in those areas, do we have an agreement with them?
Hey, Beatrice, I think there's a bit of confusion here.
So the busy ones that
so,
are.
So under A sub 3, are you talking about K and J that say 50 feet adjacent to Highway 101? That means any street end, it's not, the spirit of this to me seems, the chief is talking about where a city street abuts one of ODOT's right-of-ways, they can't camp between that right-of-way and 50 feet back on a city-owned street end. Is that the spirit of what you put in
correct.
There?
Okay. 101 and 20 are pretty much, I guess, police themselves. There's really nowhere. You just can't pull off to the side of the road on 101, and you're not going to be blocking some type of right-of-way. Same with sidewalks. You can't pitch a tent on a sidewalk and not block the pedestrian right-of-way. So these are the collector streets that are coming up to 101, coming up to Highway 20, and going 50 feet off either direction.
I appreciate the work you've done on this, Chief, and it's as if you can get them closer, I'm sure you will. But I think it's really a challenging, and I appreciate that. I think you've made adjustments that make it work. One question: when we say no camping in front of a residence, does that include a vehicle?
Yes. Yeah, there is no separation between vehicles, tents, cot. It's. And the Boise decision also just refers to persons resting. It doesn't say whether they're in the structure, in a vehicle, on a on a cot, on a park bench, things like that.
Thanks.
And just to clarify, I'd love to take all the credit for it, unless you don't like it. This was Derek's fault. but there has been a lot of staff time and a lot of collaboration. Uh-huh. You know, Eric and I have spent a lot of time together. Working on these and then also getting input with Spencer.
Move, Spencer.
Yeah.
It's appreciated. Yeah.
It's an informational item. The question we have for you is generally, is this good to move forward after review for public hearing, or do you want us to take it back and do something different? And if you want us to do something different, what specifically do you want us to do? So.
I think we beat this up enough, haven't we?
Well, I have a question about one word in here. It's on the very final page about personal property. It said it will be separated during cleanups from junk. Junk will be immediately discarded. But in your list of definitions, there's no definition of junk, and I wonder if that would be problematic at some point. Like, should it say wet, dirty, garbage, or something unusable? Or, I mean, is junk the best word? I'm just thinking somebody might argue about that most violently.
I would suggest you say, items that are unreasonably soiled shall not be retained.
I believe that this is covered in the Oregon legislation because it's very specific on what it is we can throw away immediately and what it is that we have to store. And so what we could do is either add a definition or just make sure that it is in line with the House bill that refers to this, that talks about the 72-hour notice, the 30-day storage, and things like that. But that's a good catch.
Most agencies are using their own due diligence and reasonable man statutes as to what is retained. I clean up a lot of camps, and we've never disposed of something that the individual who previously owned it didn't go back and say, yeah, you know, that wasn't something I wanted. So, I mean, if it's soiled undergarments or a tent immersed in storm water, those aren't things we tend to keep unless that immersed tent contains other valuables, which we do catalog. So I think it probably wouldn't hurt to put a reasonable clause in there, but if you think the ORS supersedes that, then I guess there's no need to add too much more verbiage.
We err on the side of caution. If you went to where we are storing items, you would question why we decided to keep that. So what somebody owns, it's not up to us to determine what's of value or not. It's very apparent, the things that we throw away.
I welcome you to come clean camps with me anytime you want that lived experience.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, I think we have, I'm reading the tea leaves right, I think we have consensus to send it in for legal review, and we'll bring it back for a potential public hearing and adoption once that is completed.
Okay. All right.
What's that?
We ready to move on?
Oh. Blair, yeah, did you want to say anything, Blair?
No, I appreciate what else have done to address some of the more objectionable aspects of this. So I think what you've got is something that seems to be workable.
We appreciate your participation in that process. So.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay, on to 7D. Eric?
This is a discussion on ordinance regarding abandoned shopping carts.
Good. Spencer?
Police Chief Jason Malloy has developed a draft ordinance to better regulate shopping carts in the city of Newport. This follows discussions that he has had and the department has had with businesses over the course of the year. We end up getting a lot of shopping carts in a lot of places throughout the community. And under the proposed ordinance, there would be, again, a potential fine if a shopping cart that's reported isn't addressed. And Chief, why don't you give a brief summary of the criteria that would be used in those cases.
Like Spencer said, this is not new to us. This is a complaint that we've received frequently. If you've been around Newport, you'll see shopping carts in a variety of uses and places, sometimes in use, sometimes abandoned, sometimes carrying worldly possessions. Some people live in them. There's a variety of stuff. Earlier this year, the police department contacted all of the businesses. I believe there's get the number wrong, it's 11 or 13 of our businesses in Newport that utilize shopping carts, and they all agreed to pursue theft charges on any shopping carts that were taken from their facilities, and they've all kept to that. And so when we find shopping carts or we find people utilizing them, we obviously begin a theft investigation to how they came. We do know that not one of the businesses has ever given somebody permission to have a shopping cart and use it for personal use. If you look at the cost of a shopping cart, they are extremely expensive to purchase. And under this ordinance, this would allow, this ultimately puts two things, is it does require the shopping cart owner or the business owner to pursue theft charges if a person is found in possession of this. For abandoned ones, it does require the business to make arrangements to come pick the shopping cart up within 72 hours. This is not a police or city function that will deliver it back to them. We may take it and store it just for safekeeping or to avoid any type of a hazard, but they do have 72 hours to ultimately pick it up. If they don't pick it up, that could result in a fine. And in our case, I think we had wrote it up at a $50 fine. Plus, there is also the option of violating this ordinance, which is an ordinance violation punishable by a $500 fine, if that route is taken. And there's a variety of these ordinances throughout. I listed a few of them in here. These aren't just all larger cities. This one is actually modeled after Astoria, very similar in nature to the makeup of Newport. They've had very good success. Oregon law already allows for ordinances like this to be created. It's very specific that how they're going to be handled. And so ours, the one that's drafted in front of you, actually came from one of our sergeants who had a great idea of a mutual agreement that we would enter into with all of the businesses. But we decided it would be better to actually make this an ordinance instead of an informal event, which just holds everybody more accountable.
Did you discuss the aspect of limiters with the larger stores?
That hasn't been talked about. I struggle with, even that's a very large expense, to any store. What a limiter does is going to keep a shopping cart from going so far away from the property. It's kind of like a geofence that once it gets to a certain spot, the tires or the wheels will lock up. alarms may go off, things like that. That is a very large expense. I struggle a little bit with us, requiring that. But again, I'm not the policymaker. So this was, I think, kind of that middle road that holds everybody accountable, and hopefully we'll just clean up some of the shopping carts we're seeing everywhere.
Do you know how much those devices are, Ryan?
It's like $100 per linear foot to put one out. I did a bunch of research on it before I wrote that letter earlier this summer. I think the chief's right. This is a measurable step to reduce blight and traffic safety. And those are two aims I had to work towards the issue. So if this ordinance addresses collection within a reasonable period of time, and increases pedestrian traffic safety, then I'd certainly be in favor of trying it out.
And we would work with the business community. We know this isn't adopted tomorrow or anything like that. And so we would make sure that they're well notified and educated on that the ordinance is coming, what is expected of them, making sure that we have all the numbers needed, things like that. Who do we call if we find your carts? And, if you've ever bought a shopping cart, which I haven't, but I have researched, these are $500 to $1,000 each. And so seeing these, that much money just laying around on the streets is going to be bad for the business.
I have a tally of the number that I've returned that I found in the wilds of Newport, and I'm up in the 500s during my working career that I've just picked up because I don't want to be the one to leave it on a sidewalk and then someone gets injured, so I just take them back to the stores. But big box retailers need to shoulder that burden, not myself. And so I think this is a good product here. I'm hoping that it will address the issue as we see it around town.
Why don't you make a motion, Ryan?
Yeah, I think I will. Beatrice, everything okay over there? Or I'm going to go ahead and move, if that's cool.
She's leaving.
She's out of here. She's had her fill of me. I'll move to schedule a public hearing on an ordinance addressing the abatement of abandoned shopping carts for the August 15th, 2022 City Council meeting.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilor Parker, seconded by Councilor Goble. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Okay, on to 7E.
Authorization to submit legislative priorities to the League of Oregon Cities, LOC.
Okay, Spencer.
Well, at our work session, the council prioritized individually priorities for the council to consider submitting to the League. Those top five items included, the top item was lodging tax flexibility, number 14, number 13, property tax reform was the second highest item. And then infrastructure funding to support needed housing, community resiliency and wildfire planning, and investment in community climate planning resources were the top five that came through the prioritization process. And if the council's comfortable with that, the numbers are number 3, number 4, number 11, hold number it, 13, hold it, hold and number 14.
Number what?
3,
4, 11, 13, and 14.
14?
Yep.
I can move on that.
Okay.
I move to identify number 3, 4, 11, 13, and 14 as legislative priorities for the City of Newport for the 2023 Oregon legislative session and authorize the city manager to submit those priorities to the LOC.
Is there a second? Second. Been moved by Councilor Parker, seconded by Councilor Kaplan. All those in favor, vote yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously.
Must be getting close to midnight there, CM.
Yeah.
7F,
we won't
even.
Can I actually ask on this next item, can we table it to the earlier conversation? Maybe you need to read it first, but I'd like to motion to table it.
Yeah, that could be done by motion if you wanted to make a motion to table until whatever time you could do that.
December 31st or something?
Well, there's no motion on the, there's no action tabling at this point, so. Mm-hmm.
I know there's no action. I'd just like to table it so we could, like, envelop it in that other conversation.
Okay.
Table indefinitely, then, you're saying?
Table, what are we tabling? Just the motion we just made?
No. This, 7F. About the free rec center.
7F is a report on potential action on the use of the recreation and aquatic centers by elected officials.
We want to table it?
Can I motion it now?
Sure.
I'd like to move that we table this item to end of year conversation around potential compensation for city councilors.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was made by Councillor Hall, seconded by Councillor Kaplan. All those in favor, say yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. On to 7E.
This is an emergency report of the July 15th broken sewer for the Bayfront pump station.
Oh, that's okay. Right. We got it.
Spencer?
Again, on Friday, I declared a limited emergency in order to make repairs to a broken force main that was located right outside of the lift station at the bottom of the hill on Hatfield and Bay Boulevard. The work got completed. We had to get a contractor in to complete the work. That work got completed on Saturday afternoon. So the under the ordinance under the city code on limited emergencies, I have to present this at the next city council meeting, and the council can either continue the emergency or terminate the emergency, and my recommendation is that the council terminate the emergency.
Big so motion. Explain what happened, would you please?
Yeah, basically there's a, the lift station has pumps in it that forces the sewage up Hatfield and into a gravity system that goes then to the north side plant. And then the north side plant ends up pumping it back over down under the bay up to the wastewater treatment plant. The force main right outside the building, it was a PVC pipe that had a lateral crack. And what happened then is after it cracked, the pressure of the sewage coming through the crack ended up flooding over into Bay Boulevard. This was on Friday when that occurred. Our crews went up there. They did a great job of going into an area that has an unbelievable amount of infrastructure built in there, so they had to literally vacuum out with the Vactor truck the area to get down to the exposed force main, which is down quite deep, and they had to disassemble. We had to relocate some electrical. We had to, there was a lot of stuff over above this force main. Once it got to a certain depth, we were required to bring in a contractor to do that work. The contractor mobilized first thing Saturday morning. They completed the work about 4 o'clock. And then once the pipe was replaced, then we were able to continue normal force main operations out of that station. But during that period of time, we were spilling sewage into Yukuna Bay. We reported that to the DEQ, worked with DEQ all along, and I think our crews did a really great job of doing the best we could to limit the impact of this overflow.
We be receiving an environmental fine?
I don't believe so in this particular case.
I hear you.
Because this was not something that was created by operate. It was a main break, and so I don't believe that would be. That's something that we would be receive a fine from DEQ for.
Good thing, yeah.
And so again, we don't have the final bill yet, but we certainly appreciated the contractor from relocating from another project to work Saturday to get this thing, repaired. So, but again, the action the council has to take is to terminate the emergency. And Peggy's a little regretful she didn't get to declare this one,
yeah.
but she's ready for the next one. So,
nothing.
Better hurry up and have a few more, Peggy, before you leave.
I hereby rescind the temporary emergency that occurred during and because of a sewer main break on the bayfront on Friday, July 16th, 2022.
Your second?
Second.
Been moved by Councillor Parker, seconded by Councillor Jacoby. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. So we go on to the local contract review board. Do I close the meeting and then?
No, you just open
no, you
the.
Just open the contract.
Yeah, just open the local
just
contract
open it.
Review
okay.
board.
I will now open the local contract review board. Spencer?
We have three items for your consideration. The first are bids for the installation of a rectangular rapid flashing beacon. To HP Civil Inc. in the amount of $204,000 on the US 101 Southeast 35th Street, on 32nd Street is the location for it, but it's part of the US 101 Southeast 35th Street signal relocation project.
Okay.
That's significant overage.
It came in much more expensive than was anticipated, so. And Aaron, do you want to come forward or in?
What exactly is it that they're doing?
Yeah, we'll have Aaron and or Chris provide you a summary.
What was the specific question? Sorry, we were walking when I...
Yeah, just what's work is involved with this particular project?
Oh, well, the work involved is putting rapid flashing beacons. I'm assuming that you guys are aware of what those are. They're scattered throughout Highway 101 throughout the city. One would be in the center median that was constructed as the 35th South Beach project, and they had constructed a foundation for that one with bolts, so that one would be simply just bolted down and pulled out of the truck, bolted down, and then one on each side of the to the west and the east of the intersection. And those would be new foundations, require some sidewalk renovations that was just recently completed to get those in and get them compliant with the way they're supposed to operate and pedestrians have access to them. So there'll be some sidewalk removal, some curb removal behind the sidewalk, some demo on two private properties, or they're within the right of way, but adjacent to two private properties. And then those foundations would be poured and new signal beacons would be put up on the sides and in the center. And One other thing about that is that it is a safety issue at that intersection since they removed the traffic signal as part of that other project. So it's very important to provide both pedestrian and vehicular safety. And so we recommend that we move forward with it. In addition to that, as you may have seen in the staff report, that we have ordered an extra pole and an extra push button because the ones in the middle of the road sometimes get hit and they get damaged. And so we recognize that that extra pole would just be used in the South Beach Urban Renewal District and not anywhere throughout town. So bids were a little higher than we expected. We didn't have that extra pole in our engineer's estimate at first. And it is a, you know, not really the best opportunity and time to bid a project as people are busy, as you know, and construction materials are really inflated at this time. But we still recommend going forward with that.
Okay, Councilor Goble.
So, I mean, ODOT just did a tremendous amount of work in there. We spent millions of dollars in putting sidewalks and roads and stuff in there. This wasn't anticipated when all that construction happened in there?
I can't comment on that because I wasn't here, and I don't know the entire history of the roadway project from before and why it wasn't included in that. But towards the tail end of the first project, it became noticeable that there's perhaps going to be an issue here with crossing. Unsafe.
That was added after.
Partly anticipated, not fully.
After the project was started. And Derek, do you remember any?
It was an issue that was raised through the design process, but it didn't get into the final plans that ODOT developed for that site. And when we flagged it towards the end, recognizing it wasn't in the final plans, they then said, well, it's too late to add it. So what we ended up doing was saying, okay, well, then we will follow up your project with it because it's an essential piece here. And then during the course of construction is when our public works folks did everything they could to kind of position that location for future installation of the rapid flashing beacons. That's why the foundation was put in place in the center median area.
Right.
Is that on the north side or the south side of 32nd?
North side.
North side?
Yes. Oh, wait, I think it's on the south side.
Be the south side, yeah.
There's a median there that goes to the north, which could be considered part of
because
the
you can't make a left turn there, yeah.
So. Right, yeah. It's on the south side of the intersection.
South side of 32nd, yep. Yeah. And is this money coming from Urban Renewal?
Urban Renewal, correct.
Okay, I'll move on. I'm not happy with the extra cost, but I'll move on.
Ready? Go ahead.
I move to award the US 101 Southeast 32nd Street rectangular rapid flashing beacon. Well, that's a mouthful. To HP Civil Inc. in the amount of $204,000 and direct city manager to execute a contract subject to final revision and authorization by our lovely city attorney.
Second.
Been moved by Councilor Goble, seconded by Councilor Parker. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, passes unanimously.
So this is not going to be approved till David gets back?
Yeah, David is going to be back on Thursday, and he's planning on catching up on these before I leave so that I can execute any agreements before I leave, because I'll be coming in on Saturday to clean up.
We ought to
get
him some more work that he needs to do when he gets back. Yeah.
What's that?
I think we ought to load him up with some more work.
We are. If you continue making motions, you will. So.
Okay.
I'd like to add on this that we do have a little bit of a lead time, as I mentioned in the staff report, because it takes some time to order these poles and get them delivered to the site and to the contractor. So. Getting a signature, we have a little bit more time gap.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay. 8B, please.
Big one.
Award of the Southeast Moore Drive Sidewalk and Overlay Improvements Project to Road and Driveway Co. in the amount of $778,361.29.
Spencer.
The city engineering department had previously bid out Southeast Moore Drive sidewalk improvement project as a separate project. The intent was to get that work done and then do a resurfacing project after that work was completed. Unfortunately, we put it out. We got zero bids for the sidewalk work. And so Aaron combined that with the pavement project, and we got one bid as a result of the combined project for sidewalk and for the resurfacing of Moore Drive. This also includes ADA sidewalk crossing improvements. It'll eliminate, there's kind of a mid block crossing that goes nowhere right now, and that'll be eliminated with the crosswalk being moved up to Second Street. And the sidewalk gets constructed then on Second Street to provide access to the Aquinna Elementary School via sidewalk, because that's been a bad situation where we have an elementary school without any sidewalk area for any kids walking through the area. So those are the combination of projects. When this project gets done, the street is going to be striped differently as well. It'll be striped as a two-lane roadway with two bike paths on, or one bike path?
Uphill, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there's not physical
room. The bikes go fast
room.
Enough going down?
Pretty much.
Okay. So there'll be one bike lane going up, and then the bikes going down will be a shared lane with the traffic.
Which we did run by the bike ped advisory committee, and they supported that approach.
Okay. And so anyway, that'll be the way the street is laid out upon completion. Also, there's a couple drainage areas where water seeps through the road, and there's going to be some under drains put in to attempt to direct that water to catch basins to avoid that water percolating through the surface of the road. So the total project the bid award is $778,000. We also are requesting that the council appropriate $140,000 from the street fund contingency to make up the gap that we have in funding for the sidewalks, paving, and project of $140,000. And if that's done, then I would recommend the local contract review board award the bid to Road and Driveway to get this project completed. And can you talk a little bit about timing of this construction?
I'll start. As soon as we can go, we'd like to, you know, get it on their schedule and get moving. We are a little later than we would like to have been, partly because of not getting bids on the first attempt. When Chris came on, we got him on board, and he actually found some other stuff that needed to be worked on before we could put it out for the whole project. But we do have language in the contract that talks about school time. So if this extends into the fall school season, there's language in the contract about drop-off and pickup times during the day and not impacting the ability. I mean, some minor impact, but not like having major construction in the way and coordinating with the school district and stuff like that. So, I mean, if they get cracking right away and have the materials and availability, then I could get done before school starts.
There's a be sidewalks on both sides?
It's ADA ramp repairs on up and down, mostly on the north side.
Okay. So they sidewalk on one side of the street, on both Second and on Moore.
Right. Which side is it going to be on? On the
north and east
side on Moore Drive would be on the north side.
And then on Second, it'll be on the school side?
I think there's an existing one on the other side by the church.
So there's a bunch of houses on that side, right? And that,
on Moore?
And fence on John Moore?
Yeah. Up the, I'm not sure the neighborhood's called up the hill there. And
We aren't replacing that sidewalk on Moore Drive. We're just doing the ADA
ramps.
On that side. So there's the sidewalk will remain the same.
Okay. One fence, it's close, but it is outside the the scope of work.
Where the new sidewalk, where there isn't sidewalk, is going to be on Second Street leading to the Equina Elementary School.
I know that the school district just, I think they got through Claire just recently. So they're going to be bringing in heavy equipment in and stuff to build those tilt-up walls and stuff.
Yeah, as soon as we have a schedule, we'll share that with them. Because, yeah, we don't, be best if they don't damage the road after we fix it.
Yeah, not to damage the road after you put it in, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready to move on these motions.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a question. We move.
Okay.
If you don't mind. I noticed there's an entry, you know, that school. Is that new? The one is kind of...
On Moore?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I noticed it's new. Is that part of the...
That is a temporary construction access. However, it's under discussion as something that maybe could potentially be kept as a permanent emergency only. So the schools, instead of fencing it back fully, would put a gate up. And there have to be an agreement with the city for fire access and all that. So if that agreement could get done, we also need to go evaluate it to make sure it won't cause stormwater issues. Because I don't know how deep they cut that out. Because it's just a cut. It's not a ramp or a driveway entrance.
Yeah, which is
cut. But if we can get through all those hoops to make it work, then that might be able to be left in place as an emergency access for fire trucks and whatnot.
It makes sense to have an exit there, you know?
Yeah.
An emergency.
And I think it's out of the way enough of First Street, not to like shoot people where we don't want them, but it, as an emergency only, it's potentially got some positives.
They poured about a 2-foot by 1-foot piece of concrete behind that curb.
Okay, that'll help.
Yeah, to keep the gravel out.
Yeah. My other question, Spencer, is that $140,000, that's not coming out of the golf course fund, is it?
No. No, it's not. So
that's how we paid for the breakdown at the Bayfront.
Okay. You ready to make the motion, Councilor Parker?
He's right to be suspicious. I move to appropriate $140,000 even from the street fund contingency to use in combination of the carryover project funding and project number 210019 and project number 150003, creating a total project budget of $805,047.00.
Second.
CM.
Motion made by Councillor Parker.
You're still awake.
Seconded by Councillor Hall. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously. Next motion.
I move to award the Southeast Moore Drive Sidewalk and Overlay Improvement Project to Road and Driveway Company in the amount of $778,361.29 and direct the city manager to execute the contract on behalf of the City of Newport, subject to final review by esteemed City Attorney David N. Allen.
Second.
Oh, you got it, Sam.
Motion made by Councillor Parker, seconded by Councillor Hall. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, motion carries. Let's see, our third and last one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. 8C, please, Eric.
Authorization of an extension of GovOS Inc. Personal Services Agreement.
Okay, Spencer?
The city has been with MuniRevs Inc. for addressing short-term rental regulations and oversight since 2019. This contract expired on July 1. They also have changed ownership names, and they are now GovOS Inc. We're recommending that it be extended for a 3-year contract. Monthly rate is $1,400, and that will remain the same. We are reviewing a couple components of that to determine whether we'll go with the full $1,400 or potentially reduce something out of that, and we'll make that call on the time that we renew it. But I'd ask council authorize the $1,400. So I'd recommend the local contract review board authorize the contract extension.
Okay.
This was talked about at the short-term rental.
Yes. Correct.
Committee, uh-huh. And yeah. I think they're all in favor of it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's I'll move down it.
Okay.
I move to authorize the city manager to sign a personal services agreement with GovOS Inc. in the amount of $1,400 a month, subject to review and approval by the city attorney or esteemed city attorney. This agreement will continue through 2025.
Second, anyone?
Second.
It's been moved by Councillor Goble, seconded by Councillor Kaplan. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. And that is all for the Contract Review Board, correct?
Yep.
I close the Contract Review Board. Okay. Any reports from the mayor and the council?
I have a thing I wanted to ask Peggy about before the meeting ends. Just for everyone's, we're trying to put together a sister city visit to Mombets for the Drift Ice Festival in February 2023. Or those four are over there. That will be beyond my term, but I just wanted to check what I need to ask the consulate. Let's see here. So the visa status requirement, is the exchange of a sister city organization considered a tour group, which would fall under the current rules for visa waiver? And then does the city of Mombetsu or the Mombetsu International Association need to sponsor the visit if a visa is required? And the testing and timing of inbound COVID testing, which is still a requirement for inbound visitors to Japan. And clarify which dates the Ice Flow Festival occur during, and those are the things I had written down.
Okay, very good. Well, Eric and I will be meeting with the staff from Mombetsu, I think it's next week, and we will ask them about some of those questions. But if you know, if you have a contact at the embassy and you can find out about the visas, that would be good to know in advance.
I think I've probably talked to everyone that works there, but at this point,
well, I think our meeting,
a speed dial. Yeah,
I think our meeting is on the 27th. I'm just.
Oh, I can get you that info by then.
Okay, very good.
And what questions I don't get answers to, you can have the organization in the city there ask their side of it, maybe.
Just let us know. We'll take care of that. There are actually. At this point, we're planning four exchanges next year, an adult exchange from Newport to Mombetsu during the Drift Ice Festival, which is in February. And then the second would be an adult exchange from Mombetsu to Newport, probably potentially in May, but that's subject to change based on what they'd like to do. And then a youth visit from Newport to Mombetsu in June or July. And then a youth visit from Mombetsu to Newport in late July, early August. Hmm. So we'll be busy next year.
That's a lot, wow.
I guess one of you four are gonna, or Dean, are gonna have to start learning Japanese, huh?
Yeah, huh, yeah. Dietmar?
So Spencer, I attended the airport committee last Tuesday, and there's an item that came up that really kind of bothered me, and I think we've talked about it several times, you and I have. And there's a guy named Doug Listra that wants to build a hangar out there. Has he talked to you already?
No, I have not talked to him.
He's been in the process now 3 months trying to get a permit for his hangar, trying to get through the process with Claire. And I told him I'd help him out, get through the process. A hangar, it's a metal building. It's just, why is it taking so long to get through that process?
We had a little discussion about that at staff meeting because I got the recommendation from Lance from the last meeting where the airport committee wants to rezone the airport to residential and two other kind of odd motions from the airport committee. I haven't had a chance to react to that, but Derek, you can talk a little bit about the building permit issue and what you can inform.
Well, I'd have to take a look and see exactly what the situation is. My assumption offhand would be that the plans don't meet the life safety requirements that they have to, and that's why they haven't been approved. Hangars, given the size of hangars, they are commercial buildings, and they tend to be engineered structures, and so it's a matter of meeting the life safety codes. I can take a look at it, see what's hanging it up specifically, and get back to you.
Apparently the drawings have an engineer stamp on them, so engineering-wise, it should be fine. I don't know about fire and life safety.
Well, one of the issues we've run into, and I can't speak to this particular hangar, but I brought it up with other hangars with the airport committee, which is, yeah, they are engineered stamp drawings, but, you know, for example, one of the other ones, the engineered stamp drawing showed improvements that the person didn't intend to construct, in that case, a mezzanine. And they asked, well, why don't you guys at Claire or you, the city, just take this off the plans? Claire's not going to take on the liability of altering engineered plans, nor is the city. And so we have to turn it back to people to make those modifications. In that case, the mezzanine that they were not going to actually construct had to be replaced with something else because the diaphragm of that mezzanine area actually supported the structure. So if you took it out, then the structure wasn't sound.
That's a different hangar, though, right?
It's a different hangar, but those are the types of issues we work through on these. So I can take a look at Leister and see what it is and report back to Spencer.
Would you do that?
Yeah, be happy to do that.
The other thing I was made aware of at the meeting was that the self-service have gas is not available. If anything is broken again, the card reader won't work and stuff. And we're losing revenue on gas and stuff in there that people can't.
I think we have gas that we can serve, but not through the self-serve because of that.
You can, as long as you're 5 to 8. If you show up after hours, you can't get right. Gas.
And so I know that's something, and I'll follow up with Lance on what's happening with that, but I know we've had some problems with that some aspect
reader,
of that
yeah.
Card reader.
Yeah, apparently the card reader is not working properly, and it's old technology. It's a modem or something in there, that 50s technology or something, you know.
And I can certainly follow up with what the resolution to that issue is.
Yeah, that means somebody flies in, and after hours or they're at 6 o'clock, and now that it's daylight till 10 o'clock at night, they want to fly and get some gas. They can't do it, you know.
I have a comment about a mail which Spencer, Derek, and I received from Amy Thompson. It's about the continuing trash problem out at Surfview Village. You know, it looks like blight, continuing blight. And once you get blight in one area, I'm afraid it's going to spill over to other areas out there in that brand new complex.
Is that a new place? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't cross the highway in that case.
Okay. Well, what can be done about that? Who is administering? Who's in charge of the administrators?
Well, there's a couple issues there. I have forwarded it both to Jason and Derek review the regulations. Also, Thompson Sanitary is our franchisee, and they could refuse to pick it up in its condition by their franchisee until they clean it up, but. Either Derek or Jason, have you had a chance to follow up on that issue? You know the issue that I'm talking about?
I was waiting for a Derek response because I believe it was part of the franchise that we were dealing with, or we don't deal with the franchise side of things.
Yeah, we'll be setting up a meeting with Thompson's. There's a couple things. One, we're more than happy to talk to him about what can be done during the course of plan review, pre-construction, to make sure waste management is appropriately set up from day one. But once you go past that, it then becomes more of Thompson's responsibility as the franchise holder to enforce in terms of ongoing operations. If somebody's not managing their waste appropriately, Thompson's can refuse to serve. I mean, they've got a pretty big hammer. So part of this is going to be a conversation with Thompson's about city role, Thompson's role, in trying to make sure that's very clear.
And then the people who built the trash receptor and the trash compactor out there have some responsibility, too, to make sure it's working.
Absolutely.
And it has not been from week one. Mm-hmm. It has been a big issue out there with the trash disposal for the residents. Mm-hmm. And I hate to keep kicking that can down the road because it's not fair to people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
So when is the discussion going to take place?
Is that compactor in a fenced area?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be reaching out to Thompson to set up a meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But But it's Amy, is Amy putting it back on the city? Is that me saying?
No, no, she's not. I was. I think we have a responsibility since we helped build the place. Who hired the administrators exactly? Is that the county and the city jointly, or you know the people who?
What do you mean hired the administrators?
The people who administrate the apartments out there.
That's a private operation.
Entity, yeah.
I mean, it's a private development.
Okay. Okay.
We are not part of that process. Not,
so. Okay.
Thank God.
Not at all. Yeah. Okay.
We provided tax abatement for the project, and we provided other support. Through the things that council did to try to encourage housing for nonprofits, but that's not our project. We have no authority over the operation. That's a private development.
If you bring up 9 more issues at Surfview Village, you get a free coffee.
Oh. That's my issue, yes. Thank you. That's it.
We're done, huh?
Okay, I close the meeting. But I keep open the public comment for the TSP. Right?
No, that's an ongoing
okay.
story.
Can I just ask a question? Is there a plan for the national night out for the city of Newport? Because I know that comes up right after the next council meeting.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up because the council has a booth there.
Cool.
Yeah.
And when is it?
I just forgot to tell you. Sorry.
Night out.
In fact, it's I just made August that up 2nd. This morning.
Right. We ask them.
So Peggy will get details
out. Yeah, we'll have the council will have a booth there. We'll get everything set up for you, and if we could just have some of you show up, and I'll get a sign-up sheet together. So we'll see you there.
Where?
What?
Waiting for public comment.
It's been at the Armory in the past.
It sounds like Nyla has public comment to make, folks.
Thanks.
Ah, okay. Let me. Let me turn this on again. We have additional public comment.
Thank you. It's just a couple of brief things. Brian's idea about his stipend is something that Carla Perry brought up years ago. And you could means test members receiving the stipend and people who got, I don't know where you'd set the number, but people who got over the Oregon average income of what, $65,600 or something a year, could just not get the stipend or something. I mean, you guys could figure out a formula. I think he's right, and it's important. And my second comment is about the water conservation group. You have all industry people in there. You don't have any citizens. That's it. Thanks.
There are citizens on there.
That have no industry ties?
I know that Mike Broyley with the I can't think of the name of it, is not industry.
Watershed?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. I mean, they're probably farmers and you know, who have an economic interest. So, you know, you don't have any citizens in the group. That's
Isn't Jay Feynman a retired veterinarian, not an industry person?
Yeah,
but it's a billionaire group. Wasn't he affiliated with a group?
He is affiliated with a group, but he is a citizen in the community as well.
He's affiliated with a community forest, Jay Feynman. That's what he's on there as.
Another economic interest. And as you pointed out, Cynthia, no women. Okay. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Okay. Now we are adjourned.
Or
take away from that group.